Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Van Morrison. From the dark end of the street to the bright side of the road. I don't know where Etor is, if he's in the dark end of the street or the bright side of the road today, so we'll find out. So which is it, Etor? All right, dark end of the street or bright side of the road? Where are you today?
You know, it's a flexible operation, Matt. Depends on the last email or phone call I received.
There you go. Mike Etor, Major, United States Marine Corps, retired, prior enlisted guy. Was with us, I want to say about a year ago, Mike, and I've been with us a couple times talking about different leadership topics. He is the founder of Fidelis Leadership, and they've got a Fidelis Leadership group, and they've got an event coming up next week. So we wanted to have Mike on, and first of all, catch up, and then talk about the event they have next week. Before I have you reintroduce yourself to the audience, something I should have you do right now, but because I'm impatient, I won't. New York Times story about the first female rifle platoon commander in Marine Corps history. And the interesting part of the article is that the New York Times went halfway around the world and got a whopping two quotes from her who said that she did not want to be interviewed, and she did not want the focus of anything to be about her. I'm curious, Mike. Look, I don't know her. I've heard about her. I've heard she's from people that evaluated 2-4 during their McCree that she's a good rifle platoon commander. And the way she's pushed back on the whole media circus that if she chose to, she could have participated in, to me reflects great credibility on her and her sense of professionalism. I'm curious about your thoughts about that as you've watched this woman, a first lieutenant. Her name is it's H-I-E-R-L, Hurl, it sounds like. So anyway, I'm curious. You we've all kind of kept an eye on this. How would it work out? Your thoughts on how she's handled all of this?
Well, I haven't talked to many people in the know on her. So I still have that special trust and confidence in the IOC staff. And if they say she made it, you know, I don't have any problems with that. I applaud her for being, you know, kind of the vanguard of the Legion, so to speak. I really think she's doing a wise thing. A commendable thing, if not a rare thing, by really avoiding the limelight. She's either very mature and savvy, and or she had some strong advice, because we all know how these things go. Once the press starts on something like this, a trailblazer, then there's no chance of it failing or even being mediocre or average. Everything's going to be outstanding, stellar, and, you know, everybody's basically compelled to say, you know, great comments and all of that. I think that she did a very good thing by just wanting to be a rifle platoon commander. So I applaud her. I mean, I think that's great. You know, there's a time when the leader needs to step in the spotlight, and there's many more times when you just need to stand on the fringes and shine that light toward others. So I think she was aware of all the scrutiny that's been put on the previous women with Ranger School and just other MOSs. So good on her for the avoiding the media stuff. I really like that. That's an indicator of some character to me.
You know what? To me, that's the story. You're not going to see that in a headline because it's not sexy enough. And it certainly won't pay the freight for a New York Times reporter, to go halfway around the world, and then come up with a story, that headlines, quiet professionalism, a first Marine infantry officer who pushes away the media, wins high praise among Marines. That's not the story they want to write. I completely agree with you. What I've seen, I don't know who she is. I'd love to sit down and talk to her about her experience. I'd love to sit down and talk to her about leadership and get her thoughts on it. So interesting. All right. So reintroduce everybody to yourself. In 120 seconds, tell everybody who Mike Etor is.
Mike Etor is a retired U.S. Marine. I enlisted in the Marine Corps in 1974. Did 4 years as an enlisted Marine. During that 4 years, I was very blessed to have some really good leaders and outstanding, opportunities. I was actually a drill instructor before I finished up my enlisted days. Then, with no hope of getting selected for the MESAP or any commissioning program due to my, let's just say, mediocre high school grades, I had to get out of the Marine Corps and attend college, on the GI Bill with full intentions of going back into the Corps as an officer once I got my degree. And I did that in 1982. I was commissioned, infantry officer. And primarily served in infantry and infantry-related billets until I retired in 1998. Geopolitical expert that I was, I thought that, I had attended all wars possible. I didn't see anything coming up in the future. Nothing's going to happen. So 1998, it's time to go out and get in business, conquer that battlefield. And of course, we all know that just a few short years later, we engaged into what have become nonstop conflicts and a host of other flare-ups around the world. So,
okay, hold on. Let me ask you a question about that. Do you regret getting out when you did?
No, I have no regrets about getting out. I'll put this caveat on it, Mac, and I think any real Marine would say this. Had I known in 1998 that we were getting ready to strap it on and go to war in 2001, 2002, oh, no, I would not have left. I would not have left at all. I felt bad enough. I used to watch it on CNN. My eyes were glued, especially during the early run-up to Baghdad and all that. And I told my wife, at this moment, if a helicopter lands in the front yard, I'm getting in it. Even if I just have to be going to be an ammo humper for some machine gun squad, but I just took it as, divine intervention. I just wasn't supposed to be there. But, I can assure you, terrorism was on the site. I was acquainted with that earlier than most. But I really didn't foresee these large-scale wars coming up. So, no, I'm just not supposed to be there, I guess. Lord works in mysterious ways. But, no, I would have never retired had I known this was going to happen. That means, I may not be alive today either if the other fork in the road was taken.
Right. Somebody asked me if I regretted getting out. They said, Mac, look, all your peers are battalion commanders and regimental commanders. Do you regret getting out? And I've thought about that, right? Because we all kind of if you're an officer, that's kind of what you. That's kind of what you aspire to command, especially in combat. And, the things that I did with my kids and my family, I would have never been able to do. The way they grew up in a town of about 70,000, about 63,000 in North Dakota. I was able to coach my kids and be involved in their lives like I never would if I stayed on active duty. So it's a tough. But I've concluded that I wouldn't trade that. And I envy my friends who commanded. In fact, a mutual friend of ours, Dave Furness, took over the Second Marine Division. And so I was at Camp Lejeune, I'm sitting there, and because he and I are buddies, I'm sitting in the VIP section in the front row, right? So here you're watching. Yeah. I've known him since he's a first lieutenant. In 1990 when we met. He stands up, he takes the microphone, and his mom's there, so he talks to his mom, and then he talks to his wife and kids, and then he turns around and faces the division, right? 4,000 members of the division in the parade. And you look and you're like, I wonder what the hell is going through his mind right now. Now, funny enough, he didn't get emotional when he spoke to his mom or his wife and kids. He turned around and he went to talk to the division, and his voice cracked. And I thought, nah, I wonder how that's going to play when we go home tonight. Like, wait a minute. Like, it was wonderful, but why the hell did your voice crack when you spoke to your Marines and not to me? So anyway, but you know, that's it. So command is a special thing, but again, I wouldn't trade my life as it turned out for to be in command. So just kind of an interesting question somebody asked me.
I share the same thoughts. I mean, because nothing appeared on the horizon from a real combat perspective, aside from the occasional grenade or something like that in the future, those kind of incidents, I really didn't think anything was going to go on. What was on the horizon for me was I would have been in zone for lieutenant colonel right after I left. And that meant, really, long story made short, that meant by the time I could retire as lieutenant colonel, I would have had to move my family 3 times. And, relative to the command thing, it's a great thing. I never aspired to be a battalion commander. I just aspired to be a Marine. I achieved more than I ever thought possible. I was blessed to be in the right spot at the right time several times. I'm confident enough to say, I can't say I was a battalion commander in peacetime or combat, MEU commander, whatever. I mean, looking at the law of averages in my history, I like to think that, if I was suddenly put in that position, I think I would at least do okay. But that's all speculation, and I have no problems saying that a lot of our buddies get it, and I did not. So I'm more than happy and confident to state that I am just a bald-headed retired major. When you tell someone you're a retired major, they don't know you're a former enlisted, so they automatically assume that a guy got passed for lieutenant colonel and all that. Bothered to explain that at all.
You're a shit
nerd. Never bothered to explain it.
As a fellow retired major, and you'll see guys rush to footnote it. You're retired as a major? Yeah. Interesting. What does that mean?
I'm a bit of a smart ass, and I haven't sent the message to Dave yet, but my statement is, we'll be in contact and we'll see who's really running that division 6 months from now. I've sent those emails and texts to people when they've made colonel, regimental commander, general, and I always really sincerely I'm happy for them. I'm just so happy to see guys that worked for me and former students when I was on the TBS staff just greatly exceed anything I've ever achieved. That's really that really motivates me. I love to see that. But I always follow that text up with, if you and I are on this board, you might be sending me this text instead of me sending you the text, And usually they always laugh about it and they say, no argument there and all of that. But that's speculation. These guys that have gone on to do great things, Dennis Green and I sat there. Dave actually reported to me, and I believe reported to Dennis for a while at TBS when we were the old guys, the offense and defensive tactics section heads. And I remember sitting there one time with Dennis, and we had Furness, Roger, Turner. We had all sorts of, guys up there. And I remember looking at Dennis and saying, Dennis, you're seeing what I'm seeing. He goes, yeah. And I'm like, we're just happy we don't have to compete with these guys.
Right.
We're senior to them. How would you like to sit out there and be amongst those group of meat eaters? And one of the toughest things I know I ever had to do administratively was provide fitness reports to a group like that, where you had to call someone number one and had to call someone number 11. And you're talking to all Marine officers who were clearly the alpha male from the battalions that they came from. So those were some interesting conversations, and I'll tell you what, not one of them handled it poorly. The first time someone ever got a fitness report, he's number 8 of 11.
Right.
And I said, just relax now, listen to me. You're going to be okay, you're going to school.
Before.
The difference between 1 and 11 I said, look what I wrote in the section C. The difference between 1 and number 8, where I'm ranking you, is less than a percentage point. And then, of course, you know, Colonel Conway piled on with amplifying reporting senior comments. And all of those guys, I believe all of them made lieutenant colonel. Most of them became the battalion commanders, and a few of them are now general officers. Yet they did not get number 1, 2, or 3 on some of my fitness reports. So that's a lesson out there for some younger Marines listening, is do your best, and ultimately it usually comes out the way it's supposed to in the end. All of these guys went to AWS. They all went to top-level school. You know, Randy Newman, all sorts of guys like that. These were the cream of the crop, you know.
Yeah, no, let me tell you, when you get selected to go back to the basic school, and especially over the course of the years that my career and Mike's were, the guys running the Marine Corps, a lot of them were instructors there. They were senior lieutenants and captains there.
Yeah.
And they were carnivores, and intellectually, physically, and but you know what? Because Mike's a good leader, he said something that was pretty significant. People that aren't good leaders will face situations like that, and they'll screw it up. The key to it, though, is understanding the gray area of that evaluation system and making sure that the reviewing officer is on board with what you're trying to do, the way we're going to differentiate these guys, and the way we're going to emphasize how outstanding they are and the nature of competition at the basic school. And then by doing that, when a board looks at that, they're like, oh, I got it. Okay, these guys are saying that.
Yeah.
I know these guys. All right, this guy's obviously good, even though he's 8 of 11. So back in the day. So
yeah.
Interesting.
Exactly right. And they were all young. All
right.
These guys were talking about Dave and all of these guys. They were young, so they had – that was their second duty station. So they had no alternative other than to trust me. That's what I said. No, listen to me. You're going to AWS. I know you think that being rated 5 out of 11 or 10 out of 11 – that now you are done. You might as well resign right now. You're not going to AWS or Infantry School at Benning. I said, trust me, it's going to work out. You'll see the process, but you have to trust me. We're going to take care of you. And your comments are on point, Mac. We had that problem at TBS with so many studs, so to speak, and you have to do that. And General Conway really, really mastered the process as well. And the proof is in the pudding. All of those guys did well. You won't find, I do think you won't find many people ranked 8 of 11 wearing stars later on in their career. Unless they were at some place like TBS where the density of just incredible talent, was just largely unparalleled at almost any other place in the Marine Corps.
You know, Roger Turner is now, I believe he's a major general. He just got back from Afghanistan as a brigadier, headed out to 29 Palms to be the commanding general of the Marine Corps Combat, the Marine Corps Air Ground Combat Center. First IOC class that I helped put through as an instructor, Roger Turner was a second lieutenant in that class. And you could tell, like, who's that guy? Right? One of those guys. Like, blah, 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 blah. Who's he? And it looks like Wes Fox. And and carries himself. And when you think of, like, what's a Marine look like, you see Roger Turner, you point like Wes Fox. He looks like that dude right there. And,
You know who he looks like? I'm going to movie star, the old time movie star, Tab Hunter.
Tab Hunter.
Looks a lot like him. Roger looks like he could be one of those surfing movies. And I mean that in the best regard, Roger. I know you're listening.
There you go. The, I'm curious, breaking news right now. Peter Strzok has been fired by the FBI. You're a leadership guy, Mike. If you were brought in to do some leadership counseling with the FBI, what would you tell them?
You know, this one I do have some, I don't want to say inside information. I have a number of friends, with association with the Bureau. I'll leave it at that. And so I'm going to get to your question. It's no different than a military unit or a company, Mac. Largely the rank and file is utterly disgusted with some of the behavior that they have seen demonstrated at upper levels by some people in the upper levels in the FBI. And they say it's been going on for a long time. And they're on the sidelines being professional, yet silently cheering and hoping that justice prevails in our nation's largest tool of justice, you know, the FBI, you know. And so, yeah, as a leadership guy, I believe that Peter Strzok and everybody else in the FBI swore the same oath. I might be wrong with this, Mac, but I believe they swore the same oath that you and I did to support and defend the Constitution. And that you give up some of your rights of free speech. And, you know, I don't ever remember being on a military base. It may have changed. I'm dated now. I retired 20 years ago. But I honestly don't ever remember seeing a political bumper sticker on anyone's car while I was on active duty. I just, you know, we were just trained, and you just really, now we had side conversations and all that, but certainly I never heard anyone in an official capacity, even during like a battalion commander's meeting or anything like that, I've never heard anybody say anything politically motivated. And you know, remember, we were in the Marine Corps during when Bill Clinton took over, became the president. He was not one of our, you know, fan favorites.
No. The word that went around the Marine Corps is that they hate the Marine. They hate Marines. They hate the Marine Corps. The story went around George Stephanopoulos put his hands on a Marine captain from 8th and I, stopped him from going through the door. And then there was a story that Hillary Clinton would not allow Marines to escort her daughter to school, something which they'd done in plain clothes for a long time. And so that stuff went around the Marine Corps like wildfire.
Yeah. And we still were professional about it. You know, I tell one story and we'll get back to Strzok. I actually might tell this story next week during our seminar. I was on stage at TBS. This is right at the time when it has now been proven that Bill Clinton has lied, President Clinton has lied on TV about not having sexual relations with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. And now it's been revealed it's a lie. So we're teaching a leadership class. Dennis might have been up there with me. But a lieutenant basically said, look, sir, you're talking about special trust and confidence, and we're going to get thrown out if we get caught lying and all that. You know, what's the deal? And so I had to think on my feet and say, okay, like, you know, you can get good famous or bad famous out of this one, you know? But I remember it as if it was yesterday, and I said, well, lieutenants, listen to me. I can't speak for other people and how they're going to be held accountable. If you're asking me if Marine officers are often held to a higher standard than even many of the elected officials that are lawfully senior to them, then yes, I'm saying that. Others may lie and get away with it. If you lie and you get caught lying, no matter how slight of a lie, you will be out of this institution very, very quickly. And you could just, there was a silence in that room you could smell. And I think it was a very powerful lesson for those young officers because, you know, they're getting, you know, if they get caught skipping out in the meal at the TBS snack bar and not paying for it, they're going to get canned. And now you see the president that has lied on a nationwide TV address, you know. And then, of course, all the political machinations that have, well, it was on his off-duty time and all that. And we're telling lieutenants there is no off-duty for a Marine officer. Like, you go out on the weekend, you shave still. You know, there's no off-duty, you know. You're never off-duty. You are always representing the United States Marine Corps, and you will be held accountable. And so that was a real dichotomy that was, you know, real clash of situations and ideals and accountability. So I'll leave it at that. It was a powerful lesson. Relative to Strzok, I can say that I had to resist the urge to throw my coffee cup at the TV when I was watching him. I don't know him.
His testimony a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I just the whole body language and all of that.
Yeah, that was pretty. Watching it was like, yeah, wow.
Yeah, it was contemptuous. And I talked to someone that that has some connection. And he said that, you know, some people, and I think he was including him, some people have forgotten that they served the United States and that they served the Bureau, and that they've come to believe that they have power and that they have the ability to do things that are absolutely not in their lawful purview. But, like, essentially, we're really running the show. And so if you read some of those texts and things like that, so I, a fish rots from the head, Mac. And all I can say is, with just the anecdotal stuff, I've got no inside info, just the anecdotal stuff that you see on TV, the investigations, something is clearly wrong at the FBI, within the highest levels of the FBI. And that, a guy like Strzok and Lisa Page and some of the others, that doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
That didn't happen even just under Comey's watch.
Right.
Something has been going on quite a long time for it to get to this level. And to get to the level that it apparently was, people had to know. And then it gets into a subject that I am touching on, our instructors are touching on next week, is people knew. They had to know. And at a time when moral courage was needed and potentially damaging to your career, it appears that all of them just remain silent. And, I don't know. I don't have any tolerance for that. It's a bold statement, but, you know, you and I still, we always took that, and I think all Marines, all servicemen and women, you swear that oath, and that oath never runs out. And we do teach that in our classes. You know, it was country first, then Marine Corps, and then family and all. You know, you get my point. It's, you know, I mean, it's a tough line.
Mike, let me ask you, you're a leadership guy, and this stuff is all, I love talking about it because it's all leadership laboratory stuff. And,
absolutely.
And I, which is my passion, how do you change a culture like that? And I agree with you. You know, for instance, one of the things I learned in my trips to Iraq and Afghanistan, when you saw units that were doing things wrong, they didn't start that shit last night.
Exactly.
They didn't start that.
If
you go down there and you start flipping over rocks, right? Have your helmet wired on, because you're gonna find some shit. Because so when you follow that, when something bad happens and you begin to follow it and turn over the rocks, you're gonna find a whole culture. How do you turn that around?
Yes.
In an institution like
and
you do a lot of this institutional leadership, in an institution like that, how do you turn it around?
Well, I'll tell you, the FBI and the government can learn a lesson from corporate America, the best companies in corporate America. Let's say the FBI was a company that has been found to been fudging the numbers, or a publicly traded company, and they've been found to be lying, just doing wrong stuff. Well, what always happens when justice prevails is the executives involved are fired. They are gone. Many, if not most, of the members of the board of director are gone. And then they bring in strong executives that have a proven history of turning around, failing, or unethically performing companies, and they bring around these turnaround specialists and tell them, do the right thing, find the good people, and if you say someone needs to go and won't fit in with a new culture, so be it. We're going to give you basically free license to do the right thing, but we need to respond to this. We need to make the shareholders whole again. And so I think, Mike Etor's opinion, if the president called me and said, Mike, what should we do? I think you should immediately appoint an independent special counsel to go in and investigate the FBI. And it shouldn't be a heavy hitter, you know, somebody that clearly is well respected. If General Mattis wasn't the Secretary of Defense and he was just out there consulting right now,
right.
You'd get a guy like that, you know, smart guy, not a law enforcement guy, but an American guy, you know, a guy that's sworn that oath, and he understands the separation of duty and obligations and personal politics.
And there's somebody who's beyond question, yes. So that his findings and what comes
beyond
out
question.
Beyond question. Got it.
And simultaneously, I would also bring in another. I would clean house in the upper ranks of the FBI.
Right.
I'd bring in some people, and they know who to do. I mean, it's. You know, as well, it'll damage morale from everything I'm hearing from people who are well-placed. There's a huge morale problem in the FBI right now. I know a guy that's a field agent in an office somewhere in America. He said that when they were watching Comey one time on TV within the last several months, that they were eating lunch, and he made a statement that was so blatantly outrageous, so apparent that it was a lie and a misrepresentation, that most of the members in that around the table started throwing food at the TV screen. They were just disgusted that, you know, this is the guy that was running their bureau a short while ago, and he's on there saying things and obviously having done things that, had they done them, they'd have been canned. That's the consistent thing I'm hearing from current, former, and retired FBI agents, is Mike... It's rotten at the top. I still see agents routinely thrown out without question for doing things that Strzok and Comey and others did routinely, apparently on a routine basis. And that's what's disgusting them. And you know, one of the worst things in the unit is when the rank and file sees hypocrisy and double standards. And I can tell you from my anecdotal, and I'm talking several, not hundreds of FBI agents, but of various ages and experience levels and locations, they are just disgusted. I actually think they're thirsting. I think they're thirsting, to be honest with you, for a guy like if General Dunford retired soon, throw him in there. It's the classic, throw a really fine leader, a man or woman of character in that role, and tell them to figure it out. And along with that special counsel, like you alluded to earlier, shine the light in every nook and cranny. It's not good that we may have a Federal Bureau of Investigation that has got corruption weaving through its ranks. It's not good, but it's even worse. It's a fatal flaw on our country's history if we don't root it out right now. Let's go. Let's carve deep and get all the cancer out. No matter how close we've got to get to vital organs, the cancer has to go. And the opportunity's there.
No, you know, Mike, and we both know, for this kind of thing to get into the public, that's not a little bit. That's not a little bit of cancer, okay? That's like the cancer's it's gushing out of your nose. Hey, what's that coming out of your nose? Is that cancer? No. Are you sure? Because it looks like cancer. No, it's not. Nothing to see here. Keep moving. Yeah. That's how screwed up you have to be. I mean, it's like I say, how screwed up is the United States Navy when you can't hit a collision alarm? You don't know you're going to collide with a ship 2 seconds before it happens. You know minutes before it's going to happen. And for nobody to hit a collision alarm or send the ship to general quarters, it's unfathomable to me that you could be that screwed up on a ship. And that 17 sailors die on two ships, neither of which went to general quarters or surrounded the collision alarm. That's not missing it by a little bit, right? You missed it by a lot. The,
Understand those situations, Mac. Again, I'm just anecdotal what I'm reading in the Marine Times and the papers and all of that. Evidently, some of the early findings of investigations in those situations are the result of them is training standards have been tightened up dramatically, at places like, you know, the school where the surface warfare officers
right,
go.
Right, right.
Which implies, for whatever reason, they were greatly reduced in the past. Some people think that they were greatly reduced in the past because, of, you know, the gender integration and all that. I don't know if that's true.
Right.
What is true is that we've had a series of incidents in the Navy in which officers who are supposedly trained to handle certain situations, seemingly simple. I mean, it's a grave situation. Another ship is headed toward you. You've got all this radar, all these things and all that, and you can't see that this vessel is about to strike you. I mean, I don't get it. I'm not a sailor. I don't know. I've never been on the bridge like that.
I have.
But that's, I mean, Mac, it's like being a company commander and seeing enemy armored vehicles coming toward you. I mean, does someone really got to tell you that you're in trouble?
They wouldn't have to tell me, right? I'm like you. I was a grunt controlling 50 caliber machine guns and around a ship that off the coast of Iran. And I used to sit up there as an infantry guy and watch what went on. I didn't understand a lot of it, but I knew when ships were coming close to us, and I wasn't afraid to say, "Hey, do you guys know that that's there?" "Yeah, Mac, we know that we got it. All right." "Okay, just checking."
Yeah.
And then the navigator walks out 10 minutes later and looks and yells, "Holy shit, get the CO, stand by on the collision alarm." CO walks onto the bridge tying his robe, and he said this, "Come to course 1, blah, 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 187, aye, sir, stand by on the collision alarm, blah, blah, alert DCA." And he was just like the he was like, what did Stuart Scott used to say, "He's cool as the underside of the pillow"? He was that guy. I was like, whoa, shit. But you saw, and then there was an investigation. I got called up to the XO's quarters and said, "Why didn't you alert anybody that, and your Marines?" I said, "Sir, I alerted the junior officers of the deck twice, and they told me to stay in my lane, and they got it." Now, if you were on a Marine Corps range and we were shooting and you thought something was unsafe and you brought it to me, who was the OIC or the RSO, and you said, "Hey, what about this?" And I said, "Hey, you know, Mike, we got it. All right? This is what we do." What would you say?
Yeah.
"Okay. All right. I did my job."
"Of course."
Yeah. And so, but to think that they wouldn't, that you don't, and again, Mike, you've been on ship. You only need 30 to 45 seconds, maybe a minute, to sit up in bed, listen to for the words, "This is a drill, this is a drill." When you don't hear that shit, you grab your shit and you go. And you don't need 60 seconds to get going. You know, most guys, I mean, because those alarms are loud, and they couldn't do that, and my kid's dead? Are you kidding me? All right.
You know, if the officers running the show were apparently as poorly trained and lacked competence to the degree they apparently did, then why would we expect the crew to have been trained and drilled and any readier than their leaders?
No. Point well made. And the other thing, Mike, is you hear stuff on TV. For instance, John McCain's railing at the 100-hour work these sailors are putting in. Wait a minute. That's 14 hours a day at sea? That means you got 10 hours free a day? Where do I sign up for that?
Yeah.
I never did that in my life when I was underway or deployed or anything. You know, what else are you going to do? And so I hear this discussion. I'm like, you know, this is not right. This is not, all the systems didn't work. All the systems never work. That's your job as a leader. Somebody's fallen asleep. Okay, McNamara, you go to bed. Send Etor up here. McNamara, don't leave till Etor gets here. Okay, and then tomorrow morning, I want you in my office at 08. You got it? And we're going to solve why you're falling asleep on your job. Okay, that's what leaders do. Speaking of leaders, I want to switch gears. I could do this all day. You are having an accelerator August 20th through 22nd in St. Petersburg, Florida. First of all, tell us about Fidelis Leadership. Tell us about the accelerator that you're going to do next week.
Well, the accelerator, it's the Fidelis Leadership Accelerator, and it's really a three-month program with a three-day live on-site seminar. And so the people that have already registered, they've already received a suite of pre-read modules that, you know, kind of set them up for success so we can start running Monday morning. Monday morning, the first class, Mac, character.
Ooh.
Second class, special trust and confidence.
Ooh.
Third class, core values and ethos. So we're doing all the right stuff, but it's 3 days, 8 to 5. Got all instructors are Marines. We have one hybrid, Dr. Wendy Arnold, was a Marine. She, like two other of the female instructors, were students when I was at the basic school. So they were lieutenants going through the class. and I have to challenge their mental stability because they know me and they're volunteering to get on stage with me all these years later.
Did you tell them that, look, we're going to rein in the ETOR stories, okay? All those have to be screened now that I'm paying you, so don't do anything crazy.
Yeah, you know, I have not. I don't think that was in the contract either. I'm going to have to make that an addendum, you know. Like, first of all, statute of limitations have expired, and secondly, my daughter's going to be in the audience. Please.
Yeah, let's clean this up, all right?
Please don't. But Wendy was a Marine, 10 days away from pinning on major, and her application to switch over to the Navy and go to medical school was approved.
Oh.
So she's 10 days away from pinning on major. She has to go all the way back to Ensign and go through med school.
Wait,
and,
Mike, you left out the all-important, the lofty rank of major, okay? 10 days away from that.
Well, you know, somebody told me long ago, Mac, and I know, I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I was a second lieutenant, and he was an old, crusty major. And he must have been having a bad day, and he said, Lieutenant, let me tell you something. He said, you see that gold bar right there? I said, yes, sir. He goes, you know, you probably take a lot of crap because you're a second lieutenant. I said, hey, it comes with the territory. He said, let me tell you something. You see this gold oak leaf on my collar? It's a second lieutenant bar that's been ball-peened. to look like an oak leaf. He said, because, you know, I'm taking crap at this level that I didn't as a major. It just comes with the territory. So he said, so the moral of the story is, at various times in your career, your job is really to do the nasty things nobody else wants to do. I go, Roger that, sir. I never forgot that. The ball-peen second lieutenant bar turned into a major oak leaf, you know, which is why I think a lot of majors, you know, stuck in staff jobs would probably, you know, agree with that.
You know, as Joe Dunfer would say, it's the beginning of the time that you're going to give back. You've taken from the Marine Corps, you've had all the fun, now it's time to give back. Welcome to the other side. The Mike Etor, my guest, he's the founder of Fidelis Leadership. They're doing an accelerator next week. Email, hey, Mac, two questions. One, is it too late to sign up? Two, what is the target market of this? I went online and I saw the quote, and he quotes, I think your website here, quote, millennials will be C-level executives in your company within 10 years. Now is the time to invest in their development as leaders. Is this targeted at millennials? Is it good for anybody? And does this continue into the future? So
good questions. I got answers for them all.
Okay.
It is targeted not solely to millennials. Our audience, it's leadership. And the method of leadership that I'm teaching is, I call it trust-based leadership. You would recognize it as maneuver warfare, mission tactics, commander's intent. So I civilianized it. I just led at K-Force when I was a civilian executive. I just civilianized my Marine Corps leadership, knowledge and experience, refined it and packaged it up. I'm actually in the process of getting that term trademark, trust-based leadership. And you, trust me, if you see the lessons, Mac, you know it all. Any good Marine will know this. So it's for leadership. It's the science, a lot of the science that you must master. I always tell people, look, a doctor cannot go straight to cutting people open without knowing anatomy and physiology and other basic fundamentals. Then, you know, then he can start doing some of the art of surgery and all of that. So it's a general introduction to our leadership methodology. The audience that is attending, we've got, I would say we're going to end up with 80 to 90 people attending, ranges from young guy or gal that's never led, not sure they're going to lead, but they're interested, through solo businessmen, through managed levels from private and public companies, to entrepreneurs who have been very successful and have already sold one or more companies, and they're getting ready to do it again. And to quote one of them, Mike, I was with you at K-Force early on before I left. I left. We created our own company. We got it up to $100 million in revenue. We sold it. I might do that again someday. And if I do, I'm coming now, and I'm going to bring a couple people. And if we start something again in the future, I'm not sure, but if we do, they're going to be with me, and we're going to use your stuff as the foundation from leadership right off the bat, because looking back at our $100 million company, when we were a less than $1 million company and forward, almost all of the trouble we had early on was leadership and organizational skills related problems. We just didn't know what we didn't know, and we learned almost all the lessons the hard way. And I'm not going to repeat that with this second or third company that I'm creating. So we've got guys, several guys like that. And then we have several high-level executives from very, very big companies, a couple of them publicly traded. They haven't given me their permission to use their companies, but you would recognize their names. And they're coming with several of their other leaders to evaluate the merit of this program and the possibility of sending more people to future events, or to bring me and the crew in and customize the program for a 2-3-4 day on-site at their corporate campus. So it's for any kind of leader, sales leader, manufacturing, organizational, institution, public, private, government. This is good stuff. And I think, I tell people, I think it's great for some people in that audience. I don't know who they are. They're all going to learn. Some are going to be refreshed. Others are going to learn. It's going to be a total learning experience. But it's just like at the basic school, you know, Mac, there's, when you were a student, someone said something during that 6 months that changed your life. And I think for some people in that audience, someone is going to say something that is going to be a life-changing, you know, it's going to spark a life-changing revelation in that person's mind. I don't know what the topic will be. I don't know what the comment will be. I don't know the instructor that will say or the person that will receive it. But at a minimum, someone's going to walk out there out of that seminar as if they've been hit in the head with the hammer of Thor, so to speak. You know, like, I can never go back. I can never think of this again. And I'm going to tell people up front Monday, the good news is we got a lot of good stuff here for you, a lot of good knowledge. What you may consider bad news is you are now going to be literally, you're going to be infected with the good disease of leadership, and you'll never again be able to look at your people and situations in the same way, because you'll know. Because if you don't know already, you're about to know what character, moral courage, you know, when to do the right thing versus the correct thing, all that stuff we're covering. You know, trust, delegation, supervision, the S and Bamstress, we've got it all in there. I'll be honest with you, Max, a bold statement. I think this program, this 3 days and the pre-modules and the post-modules, I actually think it rivals anything I ever saw in the Marine Corps. Now, people may be rolling their eyes right now, spewing on their monitors, but hear me out. So much of what we learned in the Marine Corps was word or mouth. I could rattle off any number. I've got a class on Friday, on Wednesday, Mac, the last day. It's an hour long. And I probably have 70 slides. And you're thinking, Mike, 70 slides for an hour class. Well, some of them I'm only going to spend 15 seconds on. The slide goes up. Here's one. One of the slides are tolerate no clicks. Okay, so you don't tolerate clicks. Enough. You know, you could speak to that slide right now.
Right.
And it's all that kind of stuff that you know, but you didn't read it anywhere. some guy told you, or your company commander told you, or some instructor said it. So what we've done is we've captured a lot of that tribal knowledge that's passed on word of mouth throughout the generations, and we've written it down. We put it in classes. We put it in lesson plans. We've got slides made. And I'm telling you, people are going to walk out of that seminar hearing things that were literally told to me, or I heard guys that were from World War II say. Because, you know, when I entered the Marine Corps, there were still a ton of World War II, Korea, and multi-tour Vietnam vets. So it was always interesting when you could talk to the first sergeant or the sergeant major, and he was on Iwo Jima. And so, you know, you get those guys in front of a formation talking, and they had some very powerful stuff, some very good sayings. I admired them. And I'm telling you, some of their comments are intact on some of our slides. And even the instructors, some of the instructors don't know where I got some of this. I'm telling you where I got it. I got it from the sergeant major that I worked at the recruit depot with, who had a Japanese bayonet scar across his face. Sergeant Major Wade, his name was, not a man to be trifled with. He didn't tell the sergeant major you were going to sick bay for, you know, because you had a little bit of hurt. He would look at, he was missing fingers, and he had literally a bayonet scar across his face, like a dueling scar. And all he would say about it is he ended up in a better place than the guy that cut him. He left it at that.
Wow, Mikey Tor. The founder of Fidelis Leadership. They're doing a seminar in St. Petersburg, August 20th through 22nd at the Hilton Carillion Park Hotel. Mike, tell people where they find information if they're looking to attend.
You can go to FidelisLeadership.com, and if you go up to the top, the header portion of the website, there's various handsome pictures of me there. But you want to go to the events tab. Now, actually, skip over the pictures. That may just, you know, you may say, I don't want to see the picture, much less see this guy in person, you know. Because I'll be honest, I look worse in person than I do on the pictures. But you're seeking knowledge. It's not a beauty contest, you know. But go to the events tab and click on that, and the whole thing is there. You'll see event information, the whole curriculum, pre-read module. We've got a big infographic there that shows you the whole course. There's bios there on all of the instructors. And to answer the other person's question, yes, we're going to have some of these events in the future. I don't know when. We're going to master it first. I have grand aspirations for this, Mac. We're going to master it first locally. And we're also going to have some follow-on courses that build upon this. This is almost purely and entirely leadership. We're not getting into too many management techniques here, like, you know, how to manage a project or anything like that, because I always say, hey, before you get into surgery and healing the body, you got to know how the body works. You got to know this. So that we're bridging the gap. I got a graphic being made where it's on the left of it is science of leadership. On the right is art of leadership. And in the middle, there's a quadrant there that says experience. And that's what makes, you know, experience allows you to apply the science in an artful manner. And you can learn it the hard way, or you can acquire it through self-study and professional development. And that's what we're doing. If you come to us, we're going to give you some self-study. We're going to help you professionally develop. We're going to spew a lot of knowledge and help you out. And we're going to, that's where the name comes from, we're going to accelerate your journey from a novice trying to apply science to, we're going to help you, even if you're already an artist, we're going to help you clarify and make your paintings a little bit better. And I'm convinced that a leader at any level will benefit from this. So it's not too late. It is in St. Pete. It's actually right across the bridge from Tampa. I mean, you right. literally can see Tampa from you can see Tampa from the higher levels of the hotel. But we got a good deal at that hotel. It's a Hilton. It's a beautiful hotel, beautiful venue. We're ready to go. We're ready to go and looking forward to it. You know, I have a passion for this stuff, so I
can't tell.
I can't wait.
That's the problem when you come on is you don't know how much it takes for me to stick kind of to the script because you and I. In fact, we need to do this more often. One more email, and I'll let you go. Hey, Mac, I am not going to be able to attend in Tampa. Does Mike do video training? So that's video teleconferencing for businesses or organizations that are looking for products like that, Mike. Do you do that kind of stuff?
Yes. I don't yet. We're going to be taping all of this, and that's where I'm going. I can't give you a buy date on this, but where I'm going, Mac, is we're going to grow this company. Let me back up. There's something out there called the leadership deficit. I've got a white paper I actually wrote on it. Guys our age and older and slightly younger are retiring en masse at the rapid rate. So people at all levels are going to get promoted to senior leadership roles, in some cases 20 years or more earlier than their predecessors. So we are entering a real leadership shortage in America. More and more American companies are starting to wake up that the low-hanging fruit, and they can't make their product that much better than their competitors. So everybody's pretty much got it figured out. But the low-hanging fruit where they can really apply a force multiplier is in leadership. Leadership within their firm, reducing attrition, turnover, product defects, customer retention, and all of that stuff. Leadership is always the key. And so from a business perspective, there's a huge need for this. There's a lot of people doing it, don't get me wrong, but I'm confident that we're doing it well. If you stack our program up against the others, it's not cheap, but it's almost the same price as the average price is $2,500 to $3,000 for a 2-day event in the business world. That's what it usually costs.
Wow.
With nothing before and nothing after. So we're doing 3 days with extensive pre-read and a 3-month follow-up. So we've got weekly follow-up emails, 3 live webinars where they're going to feed us questions and we'll answer their questions and all of that. So we've got that going on. We're going to take all of that and I'm going to put it online so that we can, you know, some people are just never going to be able to fly and get here or whatever. And 3 days away from work is a significant thing in the business world, as you're aware.
Right.
They don't have the same latitude we do as Marines. So that's an aggravating factor for some folks. But, yeah, we're going to put it online. And in the meantime, I've been coaching people via the phone. You know, I talked to them about this stuff when we've coached, and I've got limited seats for that, but I still have some ability to do that if someone wants to, you know, get in touch with me.
Okay.
But the audience is out there. We just gotta maximize the vehicles to get the knowledge out there.
All right. Tell them where they find you one more time, Mike.
FidelisLeadership.com. Go to the events page. All the information is there. There's a phone number you can call. There's an email that you can call if you contact us, we'll get back to you today.
All right. The one and only Michael Etor. You know, whose father worked in the Picatinny Arsenal, if I'm not mistaken. Yes?
Yes.
How about that? Think you remember about somebody. And you've heard of...
Did early work on the M16. He was a munitions tester. Did early work. He said there was actually a variant that was belt fed from a backpack.
Whoa, that sounds like fun.
Said it didn't work out well. It kept getting kinks in it and all that. But he was involved in the early testing of the old law. Remember the law that we use?
Absolutely.
Anti-tank weapon?
Absolutely.
He did that. Early testing of the Dragon. A lot of testing on the M203 grenade launcher.
Wow.
So he knew all these weapons. He knew them all cold, and I got a lot of trigger time with some of these. It was pretty interesting.
Nice. So from the Picatinny Arsenal, yes?
Yeah. It's funny. One time we were getting shelled in Beirut, Mac. I think I told you this story. I'm not sure, but it's worth mentioning. You know, you had the Christians versus the Muslims there, and my Marines and I were up in West Beirut, which was like Dodge City, and it was a Muslim area. So they got into it one day, and they're throwing artillery and mortars, and there was no adjustment for fire. If I'm a Muslim in West Beirut, as long as my round hits somewhere in Christian East Beirut, that's a success, you know? So they're just flinging rounds, and we're caught like in the middle of this, you know? So we're hunkered down. One of the 155 rounds hits our building about 10 feet below where me and 3 or 4 Marines were standing. So that was a religious experience.
Right.
But the next morning, I found a dud round. It was the Christians who had M1908s given to them by the U.S. military in an exchange program, and there was a dud round sitting there on the street in front of my hooch. And on that dud round was a yellow lettering that said Picatinny Arsenal. I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
Thanks, Dad. I appreciate that.
Getting shelled with American artillery and rounds that came through my dad's workplace.
That is awesome.
Not a good way to go.
That is awesome. His name is Mike Etor. It looks like Ettore, but it's not. And his company is called the Fidelis Leadership Group. They're doing an event in Tampa next week. There's still boat spaces. You know how to get in touch with them. Mike, we need to do this more often. I will be in touch. So thank you very much for coming on this morning, and all the best of luck to you next week.
You're welcome, Mac. Always a privilege. Please let me know. I'm always willing to share with you and learn from your listeners.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Semper Fi, Mac. Bye-bye.
Semper Fi. He is a great guy. If you can't tell, well thought, well spoken, and just a good dude. More of the Gunner, going to join us next here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.